I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent Breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the Lush But Not Lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 596, The Bad News Bears Go to Japan. Hooray.
So could they have stayed there?
Yeah, I saw one of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes just said, please stay there. Before we get too far afield, or should I say outfield, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, tune in wherever you get them. You can find us. Be sure and subscribe while you're there so you never miss an episode. And then check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course check out our Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers. So Bad News Bears. So let me just give you some background. Since this is the third movie, the second film was called Bad News Bears in Breaking Training, which was always such a weird title.
That is a weird title.
Like, they want to call it Breaking Training, which I don't even really get what that's supposed to mean. And then it's like, I think they were trying to do like how they used to do with old time movies. Like, there were, like, they had the Bowery Boys, and the Bowery Boys were in I forget what movie they premiered in, but they premiered in like more of a drama, and they were the comic relief, but then they pulled them out of that and gave them their own film series, and it was always like the Bowery Boys in this, the Bowery Boys in that, and like, and those were much more comical. I forget what the, it was like Going My Way or something very, pretty serious. Maybe it was Boys Home, something like that. But anyway, and so I think they were trying to do that. I guess it's probably also a kind of a way to say you're getting the Bad News Bears, you're not necessarily getting everyone from the original. So the premise,
they were making the Bad News Bears into the stars, the characters,
right?
And they were going to have them do a bunch of the Bad News Bears do this, the Bad News Bears do that.
Yeah, but obviously they're playing beat the clock, right? Because they're kids. So you get
are they in this? In this one, I'm not so sure. I think they look like, some of them look like they're in their 20s.
Yeah, well, because in the original, like the ages are all over the map. So like in the original one, like Whitewood was 14, Kelly was 14, Stein was 14, Ogilvy was 13, Engelberg was 12, Amanda was 12, Ahmed 12. And then Feldman was 10 or was 11. Tanner was 10. And then the Miguel was 8. And then Timmy Lupus, I think, was 6. So so some of them were still kind of the right age. But, yeah, they made three of these in 3 years. So they come back the next year, 1977.
Right. I was going to say, they were capitalizing on the success of the first one, and they were trying to line them up. Like,
yeah,
just one after another, of course, because they are kids and
right,
the clock is ticking.
So the first one, or the first sequel, Breaking Training, is 1977. It's still a hit. It makes $19 million, which adjusted...
Well, it's coming off a hell of a movie.
Yeah, so adjusted for inflation, it made $80 million, and it has the... It had the bulk of the kids back. You didn't get Walter Matthau. You didn't get Tatum O'Neill. But you did get pretty much the entire team to return for that, with the exception of, you'll see in this one as well, they recast Engelberg. So that's a different...
Yeah.
It's a different kid playing Engelberg because that... in between, time had already caught up and the kid had, like, grew 4 inches and lost 60...
Thinned out.
Yeah. And he didn't look like Engelberg anymore, so they... They cast another kid, and I guess to hedge their bets, they cast a kid that was significantly heavier.
Yeah. When this kid this walked time. On screen, I was like, good Lord.
Yeah. But he was the same kid, I believe, from the second one, right, Tom?
Correct. So they recast. I'm talking about Breaking Training at this point. So right. Breaking Training, you get your new Engelberg because the other kid didn't look like the character anymore. So, and then they kept him in the next one. So mm-hmm. basically, and then in that one, they don't have a coach and they basically have to they essentially steal a van and they're going to play an exhibition game in Houston at the Astrodome against a team called the Toros. And it's implied that another baseball season has taken place in the interim and that they won the championship, which
I was going to say, I love the balls on these kids where they suck so bad.
Yeah.
But by the time they get to the second movie, they're like, no, we're that good that we're going to play at the Houston Astrodome.
Yeah. So like like it's kind of implied, I don't know that it's ever flat out said, but it's kind of implied that a season has gone by and they won that year. And so now because they won, they get invited to go to this championship game.
I gotcha.
And they were clearly planning on making more of these because they even reference, in this one, there's a line where they say that, like, oh, the winner of this might get to go to Japan. And so they were clearly laying the groundwork for Bad News Bears goes to Japan. So
another ballsy move.
So but the second one, while not as good as the first one, is infinitely better than this one. It's if you like the first one, I think it's worth watching. But you get a lot. The kids are in a van traveling across country. It's basically a road picture. And so you get the kids in a way, you know, and they're interacting and that's fun. And then they go to the Astrodome and they play this team and they're about to lose. And then they call the game because it's in between a doubleheader. And they're like, your exhibition game is taking too long. And then Tanner refuses to leave the field and they're chasing him around the field to try and get him off. And then the crowd like takes the side of the kids and starts chanting, let them play. And I should also say, while they're in Houston, Kelly Leak finds his father and they use him as the coach. So they have an adult representing them there. And so there's that storyline of you still get that kind of father son relationship instead of father daughter. And then, you know, they win the game, everybody's happy and the movie ends. So, that's,
and then we get this one.
Yeah. So that's Breaking Training. And then now and not that there's a lot of continuity between these movies, but that's what occurs now. Or go to Japan, which
this movie is terrible,
awful.
I was trying to think of like all of the misbegotten sequels. This is probably the second worst, maybe. No, it's just, this could be the worst. I was thinking,
don't know. I mean, you got whatever happened.
Rosemary's Baby.
Rosemary's
one.
Baby was pretty bad. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it was. Oh, yeah. That's
it. Looked
to say,
better. It looked better than Rosemary's Baby because this was an actual movie on a screen.
Right. That was the difference. Is the budget for Rosemary's Baby was so terrible because it was a TV movie.
Right.
This one looked better and it was shot on location in Japan, so it had that going for it. So it's definitely better than that, but it's a low bar for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you guys have subtitles for this or no?
No.
Okay, good. So I watched it. I rented this because there was nowhere else to watch it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, there's a lot of Japanese dialogue
that goes.
I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it was like
I have no clue what we're saying.
There are large stretches of this movie where you get Japanese and they don't tell. They give you nothing.
Nothing.
It was so weird.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, this one's gonna be a lot of us just dogging on it because there's not a lot. There's so where the first movie, and I guess it sounds like the second movie, not so much, but like where the first movie like centers around baseball,
this one has this almost has no baseball. There's at about
no baseball.
So at about the 15 minute mark, there's a baseball scene. And other than that, you don't get baseball again until like the last 20 minutes of this movie.
It's what's so horrible about this film. You're after watching the great first one, and whether or not you see the second one, you're clearly there to see these kids play baseball. And right. They just don't do it. This movie is about everything else. I don't understand how the same guy that wrote the script for the first one comes back for this one, and that first one's so good, and this one he can't write about anything relevant to what we want to see.
I think that's because the first one came from a personal place, and now it's like, oh, they're going to throw money at me to write a sequel. Sure. Right. And he doesn't know where to go with the story. And so and the story was already probably dictated to him, right? Like they were like, oh, this one, they go to Japan, make that a thing. And so,
you know what I don't want to see? A Kelly Leak love story.
Yeah, like
that's the last thing I want to see.
Yeah, and I read years ago, I could not find it, but there was a Bad News Bears like fan website, and so I don't know how true this is, but I had read that like he wasn't going to do this movie. He wasn't going to come back for it. And then I guess they threw extra money at it and they beefed up his part a little bit, and at the last, cuz they knew that they needed him. Because at this yes. point, like, you know, only five kids come back for this. You get Kelly Leak, you get Ahmad, you get Miguel. So only one of the Mexican brothers, explain that.
They almost say one of them got deported.
Yeah. And then Rudy Stein, and then Feldman and Toby. And
Okay. But I mean, seriously, like, so this has Tony Curtis. Doesn't he say, he's like, if you don't play, I'm gonna report you? Like, is that in this one? It's in one of them. It's either in the first one or it's in this one where they talk about deporting children.
The only thing I remember is Tony Curtis has a line where he says how rough it's going to be to get him back in the country.
That's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is. Because illegal.
He's
like, I don't know how we're going to get this kid back in the country.
He didn't threaten him. He was trying to sweeten this news story.
That's right.
Let me give you a little background, because there's not much to talk about in this movie because they don't freaking do anything except for longer around Japan. So this is from the AFI website. And according to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences library files, producer Michael Ritchie's agent, Sam Cohn, suggested Japan as a location for the sequel to Bad News Bears after seeing how well the original was doing in that country. So the Bad News Bears was a huge hit over in Japan. That's why you get that Japanese poster that I shared. The people loved the movie, so they thought, well, we'll just go and we'll bring them their own Bad News Bears movie. So that's the reason they chose to do it there, and obviously baseball is very popular over in Japan. So he agreed the country would be a good setting for another installment. Let's see. They've got some information about the production, which doesn't really matter. According to a July 14th, 1978 article in the Hollywood Reporter, the Bad News Bears Go to Japan grossed over $9 million after 38 days in wide release. However, on March 24th, 1979, the LA Times reported the film earned $6.4 million, according to a lawsuit filed by Walter Matthau. The star of the first Bad News Bears protested the inclusion of the original film in a television package that included the two sequels because the deal imposed an even distribution of licensing fees. Matthau argued the original film was more successful than the sequels, and therefore he should be awarded a greater share of the gross of the television rights.
I mean, he's not wrong.
So there was some legal trouble over this one, which I thought was really interesting. I didn't expect Matthau to pop up anywhere related to this movie. But
totally.
He was in court.
He tried to distance himself as much as he could.
He was. He was like, keep this movie the hell away from my head.
Right? Okay, so that's the background on the production of this movie and the troubles afterwards. So this is from the LA Times, I believe. This is an article called Bad News Travels Fast to Japan by Greg Kilday. And so he says, Paramount Pictures is banking that has discovered a new gang of dead-end kids in his ragtag juvenile baseball team, the Bad News Bears.
Just real quick, Kevin.
Yeah.
The dead-end kids was what they also refer to as the Bowery Boys. They're like the kind of the same thing. So
there you go. Yeah, so okay. See, you were right. Okay. Good call on that one. So after the success of the first one, they were banking on tons of these movies. The third installment in the Bears' ongoing adventures is about to go before the cameras in Japan, and future entries into the projected series call for the Bears to go on to summer camp, Cuba, and the Moscow Olympics.
Well, they definitely say Cuba.
They
at the
set
end of
up
this
Cuba.
One, like, let's go to Cuba. We can talk to Castro.
Yes, so they planned on, they already had wrapped productions on Breaking Training. They were getting started to do Japan, and they had summer camp Cuba in the Moscow Olympics lined up. So the creation of the screenwriter William Lancaster and Michael Ritchie, The Bad News Bears, was released in the summer, blah, 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 earned $25 million. So the next line, when Michael Eisner took over president of Paramount Pictures, who, of course, Michael Eisner is known for his tenure at Disney, he immediately decided to take advantage of the Bears' appeal by turning out a quick sequel. And so then that's when they go into the one Breaking Training is going to come out. So Eisner, who, to his credit, if you think about the success he had over at Disney and the way that he revitalized their animation department and saved the company, he got that job because of what he did at Paramount. And so he saw the success of the first one, and he basically had six movies roadmapped before this thing.
That's crazy.
It also explains the title of that first one, right? Bad News Bears in Breaking Training.
Right.
Called Breaking Training, but it's but it's Bad News Bears in Breaking Training, right?
Right.
My notes, I showed that the box office for this was $7 million. Adjusted.
Right. So they tried to make it out like it was more, but yeah. The auditing showed it only made like $7 million.
Right. And then adjusted for inflation, that was out to $27 million today. Mm-hmm. And I think this will segue into what Joe wants to talk about. But I think this that because they knew that this movie was the first one was such a big hit in Japan, and their goal was to maybe try to set up a Japanese franchise with some of these kids, perhaps. I think that explains why, because I had never seen this movie till yesterday.
Neither had I. I'd only seen the cover box.
Yeah, and so because I just knew it was so bad, and Breaking Training is okay, but it's not great. And I'm like, well, if it's worse than that, like I just never heard it. So,
right.
But I will say, with the exception of a racial slur in the first part of the movie, I was really surprised with how inoffensive this movie was from a cultural
standpoint.
It's
way more tame. I thought this movie, like I think I said on the episode before last leading into this week, I'm like, is this movie going to be a hate crime?
Yeah, like and I'm not saying that there aren't things that, you know, that people that, you know, that take their Japanese heritage seriously might not be offended by, because there are, you know, it certainly focuses on some very stereotypical aspects of Japanese culture with geishas and you know, martial arts displays and things like that. But it definitely, like, it, for the most part, it's, especially for the era that it's made, 1978, it never makes fun of how they talk. It never, it never really makes them the butt of the joke. Sometimes the people in the movie don't really fully understand the culture, but it never really felt like it was played for laughs. Now, some of that might be because almost nothing in this movie is being played
for laughs.
There's
nothing that's funny.
Yeah, but
not at all.
But yeah, like, I really thought going into this, like, oh Jesus, this is going to be really, really offensive. And
the only offensive thing about this movie is how bad it is.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not saying that to just try to be snarky. This is a terrible movie.
It really
is bad, because again, you're talking about a team. They had no idea what to do. That's the main problem with this movie. They had the Bad News Bears. They wanted to take them to Japan because the first movie was popular there, but they didn't set it up like it was a big tournament. They didn't set it up to have a whole bunch of games and funny things to do. It's one game. It's one game, this exhibition match between the Japanese team, who nobody wants to face, and the Bad News Bears. And so you can't have an hour and a half game. So what do? You send them to Japan and you put them on game shows, and you go to this martial arts competition. They do all this useless stuff, which, if it were a different movie, okay, maybe it'd be interesting to take in the culture and see different things. But you're here in a kids' movie wanting to watch kids play baseball. you're
these
not
kids that you, these kids that you have invested in.
Yes,
like you're invested in the Bad News Bears, at least after the first movie.
It made no sense to go watch like those scenes with the martial arts. I swear, were like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
they're long.
It never
ended. I had to pause this. And I was like, I gotta come. Like, yeah. I'm falling asleep. Like, yeah. I gotta come back to this. I gotta go run around the block six times.
I fell asleep twice in this movie, and I watched it like 1 in the afternoon, so it wasn't late at night. It could not keep my attention. It was horrible.
It's boring. And like, look, we have joked about Jackie Earle Haley, his physical features.
He just looked like an adult at 17.
He had just entered that super awkward phase, right? Like, he's not a kid, he's not an adult, but he's got like that sort of adult face on a kid body.
Yeah, it's like his face looked like an adult.
Stein
as
was the same way.
But I will also say he's got charisma. Like,
he does. I still
believe that he's a ladies' man because he's just got. I mean, he's
firing
just
on ladies constantly,
and he's just got this confidence about him. Yeah, he's got my favorite line in the first movie is when they go to the ballet rehearsal. And he's like hitting on one of the adults that's taking a class, and he's like, you like motorcycles? I drive a Harley Davidson. Does that turn you on? Like, it's just
that's great.
Was it this one where Tony Curtis is like, hey, where's my drink? And like it cuts to him talking to a gal at a bar. Mm-hmm. Is that this one?
Yeah, that was good.
where he just like takes
the
Tony
cigarettes.
Curtis's drink.
Remember
off?
The cigarettes? Yeah. Hey, you want a cigarette? And he like gets three of them out of the pack, and then
he
fumbles
around.
And I gotta
tell you, there's a moment where the girl looks at him and just goes, "Maybe."
Yeah.
Like, there's a moment where she's like, "Nah, I don't know. Like, yeah, maybe a couple more drinks. I don't know."
But I think like obviously the first one suffers, the first sequel suffers because of a lack of Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neill. And so, but you know, you kind of make your peace with that, and it's okay. But like, the problem here is that I think you also lose more kids, but more importantly, you lose Tanner. And
yeah,
and the actor who played Tanner, Chris Barnes, like, he wants nothing to do with these movies. Like, he doesn't talk about them. He's never turned up on any of the retrospectives or the Where Are They Nows. Like,
I wonder why.
He wants nothing to do with it. And
that's weird.
And
I
think some of it, and I'm just guessing, is that Tanner's a funny character, right? But the people who really embrace Tanner the most are probably not the people that you want to be your fans. Like, most people. That a lot of people who are embracing Tanner that would probably interact with the actual actor aren't going to be people that are like, it was very inappropriate, but it was funny. They're going to be like, yeah, I'm so glad to hear somebody saying those things.
Oh, and yeah.
Like Andrew Dice Clay fans.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, like, that's a fun, funny character in context. But if your takeaway is Tanner's really cool, like,
right.
That it, instead of like, Tanner's inappropriate and that's funny in the context of this film, and the larger message is that he's wrong, even though you're laughing because it's so inappropriate. Like, I think I thought I had read that he came from a Catholic family and he takes it pretty seriously, and I think that maybe he looks back on this and he's just like, yeah, that might have not been the best thing, and he won't talk about it.
Interesting.
So in this movie they cast Tony Curtis as the manager figure. So he's an agent. Is that what we're supposed
to? So I thought he was like a pitch man.
He's just like some sort of Hollywood agent manager kind of guy who has a gambling problem and lots of gambling debts.
The person you want around children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's the same as the first one. Like, their instinct here isn't wrong. Like, they get a guy who, instead of having a drinking problem, has a gambling problem. And
yeah.
And they make him the manager. They bring in a big name actor like they did with Walter Matthau, right? Like, so
sure.
they start off kind of going down the right road here.
Right.
I honestly could see Tony Curtis as Buttermaker.
Totally.
I thought they were just going to recast the role. I thought it was so I was not into the manager thing, probably because the script is so poorly written.
Yeah.
But I just was not into his constant hijinks of trying to do like negotiate television deals. Like, who cares?
Right.
This is
he also he accidentally takes a kid to a massage quote unquote.
Well, to be fair, he didn't take them there.
I'm just saying, like, but there's a scene where he is leaving a massage parlor.
But also, right. like, in child. Japan, those massage parlors aren't sexual. Right.
This one was.
I 100% believe that
the kid's like, well, now you get married, right?
I 100% believe it was.
What? Oh, maybe it was.
He definitely got a happy ending in that massage parlor. Yeah. And then they have a whole sex talk afterwards. Yeah, but
I remember the sex talk.
But that was one of the most endearing parts of the movie, honestly. Him and
those. I will say those two together.
Yeah, him and Mustafa.
I liked them a lot.
Who's Ahmed's brother? They're just like they have this bond. That kid is so likable and like innocent. This little kid, and he really likes. The Tony Curtis character, and he always wants to hang around him, and they have nice little moments. As
I think that they thought this was going to be their Tanner, right? And that if they want to make more of these, they realize they had to start bringing in younger kids. And I will also say that, like, this is kind of a trope at this point in the 70s, is bringing in the cute mouthy black kid, right? Different Strokes is a huge mm-hmm. television show. Sure. Like, this is their Gary Coleman.
He's a cute kid. I looked him up because I must have seen him somewhere, but it seems like this is the only movie he ever did. But that character is in a lot of different
and I
movies.
Will, yeah, and I will also say that, like, I didn't remember it until I saw it, but, like, I remember the commercial for this movie. And they really focused a lot on that moment in the wrestling ring where he gets up on the ropes and he's like, "You gonna get it now, sucker," and and jumps on the guy. Like, that was in all the commercials. That was, yeah,
well, it was horrible. So Tony Curtis apparently at this time was writing a lot of books. So I found an article from the San Francisco Examiner from 1977 that says Tony's first book, Kid Andrew, Cody, and Julie Sparrow, got him $250,000 for the rights to that. And then he is getting $500,000 for his rights to his second novel, Starstruck. And the writer-actor is about to leave for the Far East, where he'll star in The Bad News Bears Go to Japan for Paramount for about $350,000. This dude was making bank.
But that's crazy that he was getting more for his books than he was for a movie.
$500,000 in 77 for his second book, and then $350,000 for this movie.
That's a payday.
That's fascinating.
That's a big old payday.
Yeah, so just it's interesting. I mean, he's... I don't know.
When did he die?
I'm not sure.
Because is Janet Leigh still alive? No.
I don't think so. Is she?
I don't know. I know. I mean, she was in Halloween
Janet
H2O.
Leigh died in 2004.
And Tony Curtis died in 2010.
Oh, wow. So, I mean.
Recently.
10 years ago. Good Lord. That was 10
but
years ago.
But this movie's so bad. I mean, I don't want to say Tony Curtis is the problem. He's really the only person doing anything in this movie, but it's also terrible material.
But Tony Curtis is not phoning it in. Like, he is.
No, he's in. He's in the whole time.
He's making a concerted effort. I mean, I think
it's just really bad, though. What he's doing is so bad because of the script, and which really is a head scratcher. Again, I know that the first one was a passion project for the guy, but the fact that it's such a good movie, those lines are memorable and we love it so much, and then you get him into this one and you would think that he could have come up with something, even if it were it was personal, because he's coming back to this franchise that was really successful and was so good.
Right.
You would think he could have tapped into something to make it about the baseball and the kids and enjoyable, but you hardly even follow the kids. That
the
whole
kids
point
are
is
like
in the middle.
The kids are barely in this.
Yeah.
As frustrating as that there isn't very much baseball in this one, because honestly, the second one doesn't have a whole lot of baseball, but it's almost constantly the kids.
But it's the yes, this movie's not about the kids.
You barely see the kids in this movie. So not only are half of them gone at this point, but you barely see them, and
it's terrible. The middle of the movie, the entire thing, it's like they go to that martial arts thing and it lasts 20 or 30 minutes and they're in the audience. They like cut to them sometimes, right?
And they're doing this martial arts thing in the middle or the wrestling thing in the middle of an empty arena. Like,
well, no, it starts off as a martial arts thing,
right?
Like, it's Antonio Inoki, and who is, I mean, here's your wrestling corner, he's the Japanese Hulk Hogan. Like, that dude is a massive star.
Well, that,
like,
dude gives Bruce Campbell a run for his money, I'll tell you that much.
With that chin?
Oh my gosh.
Did you watch that video I sent you?
Yeah.
that he pummels that dude.
Did that dude do something wrong? And
yes.
Okay. Because so, he starts kicking him in the head.
So there's, I sent the guys a video. Just, you can find it on YouTube. It's Antonio Inoki versus Antonio the Destroyer. And so, okay, wrestling real quick. If you are, if you need to sell, and when I say sell is like when somebody hits you, quote unquote, you need to make it look like they hit you. That's the way this thing, it's performance art. That's right. The way this works. And
it's like
in
being
Japan,
a stuntman.
Exactly. In Japan, it's a different thing over there. Like they take things very serious. Like, you know, in the Western wrestling, like the West, our version of wrestling, right? Like fireworks and signs and your crowd is engaged. Back then in Japan, the crowd didn't make a sound. Like they made a sound when a big move happened, like a big move being a body slam, then the crowd reacts. But otherwise they are completely silent. So what happens in this video is this guy thinks it's going to be a good idea to test Antonio Inoki, who is legitimately a badass. And so he stops selling for him, and Antonio Inoki pummels him to no end. Yeah. To the point where the guy on the outside, the
like
manager,
the not Iron Sheik,
he realizes that, oh, we're in the weeds. I need to like throw a towel in. Just
he
so
goes
we can
into
get
the ring
guy
and is
out.
Like
he's,
trying
he's
to
like,
get
stop,
it.
Stop, stop, stop. So like when he shows up on screen, I was like, oh shoot, this is legit. Like that's in Japan. You put him in a movie, like this makes sense.
Well, and I feel like probably those Japanese game show people were probably real hosts of Japanese shows.
Yeah,
I think
they
really put a lot of effort into this movie for Japan. Being, as they said, the first one's so successful, they clearly did more for the Japanese to go, oh, look, it's this thing and this part of our culture and this show we watch and this wrestling, where the Western audiences are there for the Bad News Bears.
Do you think this was a backdoor way to get like a Japanese remake of the Bad News Bears? Like to spin this franchise off in Japan?
Yes, I think that's exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't have been surprised if the goal was to take the team that we see in this movie and and have them have
but
their
good,
own
though.
Franchise in Japan. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the problem.
Are
right?
they good or are they just better than the Bears? Like, right? Like that's.
No, I think they were the best. Weren't they the best team in Japan though? That's why they were playing though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's a low bar.
Yeah.
Against the Bad News Bears.
I like this. So this movie review, this is from the San Bernardino.
This movie's so bad we have to go to San Bernardino
well,
to get a review. Like, nobody reviewed this movie.
There's
the
other.
San Bernardino Chronicle.
there's other ones in here. But yeah, this is the San Bernardino County Sun, July 16th, 1978. The headline is Bad News Bears Go to Japan, A Desperate Voyage to Nowhere.
We had to get a review from the St. Louis Globe Democrat.
But that's the perfect title, though, because this movie goes nowhere. It does nothing that you want to see. And while I don't mind going to a different country and seeing the culture, all that's fine. But when you're there to see the Bad News Bears, you expect one, baseball, two, the kids, the Bad News Bears. And this movie gives you hardly any of that.
Yeah.
And it was just the reason why it feels so boring and we're falling asleep during it is they just don't go anywhere. You know, 5 minutes on a Japanese game show, fine. In a Bad News Bears movie, fine.
Sure.
5 minutes in a wrestling match, a little side thing, fine. But when you depart for 20 minutes
and the
time,
other thing is it like, okay, if you're going to include the Japanese game show, put the Bears on the show.
Not the
like,
Japanese team that
right,
no one
like,
knows.
The Japanese team goes on the game show. You're just like, I guess I'm invested in these kids now, even though I have no clue what
right.
No, you're not. Spoiler alert. You're not.
And it's like the closest you get to that is in that wrestling scene where the Bears go into the ring and chaos breaks out, and it's still pretty dumb. But,
it's terrible.
But when you're seeing all these things, like you're literally watching the Bears watch what's going on in the movie.
Yes.
it's weird.
And I think that goes to, like we talked about, is they take Kelly out of the movie almost altogether.
I almost wonder if like they added Kelly Leak at the last minute. And so like they almost had.
That's the only thing that makes
sense.
Oh,
that's why he's by himself.
Right. That they almost
scenes?
Had to give him the side adventure because they had already filmed the other stuff or they were in the, it would had already been kind of scripted and blocked in that.
I bet so. Because he's really has his own adventure.
Yeah. Cause you really don't see him all that much interacting with the other actors. Like he's almost always off on his own doing something.
But
so
they almost neuter him.
Yeah.
Like he's such a badass in the first one. Where you're just like, yeah, I want the rough and tumble kid who comes to the
right
you know, kind of has a heart of gold, but is still kind of a jerk. And this one, he's just like a lovesick puppy.
Right.
And yeah. I'm like, I don't like this. You know, like maybe this movie works. Maybe that character works if it's Amanda.
Well, you know, the other problem is who they have him lovesick over, right? Like him and Amanda are a fun couple.
Right.
Because he's tough, but she's tougher. And
right.
She doesn't exactly. take any of his guff. And instead, we get this stereotypical tee-hee-hee laughing behind her hand Asian
okay, so
girl.
What is that?
Like, I don't know.
The covering of the teeth? Like, is that a thing?
I think
it's a cultural.
I think it's a cultural yeah. thing. Yeah, okay. I think
I didn't understand.
I don't know for sure. So if we have Asian listeners that are mad at me now, I apologize. But like,
I mean, the other thing is, I guess the only thing offensive, like he calls her a geisha. She's not really a geisha. That's just her like school or outfit or something. I don't think she's actually training to be a geisha.
Is that even a thing anymore? I honestly have no clue.
Well, back then it probably was,
yeah,
but
I think
that may be a little bit like offensive because he just presumes that she's
yeah like
gonna
I
be.
I think that like the,
I don't know.
The movie certainly probably has aspects that are culturally insensitive, but I also don't think that it was setting out to do that. I think it was trying to walk this line of like, we're still going to send the bears to Japan and it's going to be funny, but like we're going to show their culture in a positive light.
No, I agree
overall.
Because this was supposed to
ingratiate itself
yes.
within Japan itself in real time. Yeah.
Exactly. So I definitely don't think this set out to be offensive. So in that same review from the San Bernardino newspaper, they go on to say that the Bad News Bears Go to Japan has the appearance of a movie made by people who didn't know how or who didn't care or who possibly turned over their responsibilities to the Japanese airlines and the Japanese tourist bureau
right.
whose principal interests are prominent among these screen images.
Right. I mean, I messaged you that basically, Kevin, right? I was like, this is yeah. some sort of like cultural liaison type of film. Like
totally. They're like, hey,
there's
we have a McDonald's.
There's like 40 minutes where it just starts just it basically just shows you B-roll of Japan.
Yeah, like I think it had to have been where they were trying to get this franchise over there. They were catering to them because of the success of the first, and they either had a deal, there was some kind of financial thing. I couldn't find evidence of that.
I know. I wonder if Japan somehow like covered a part of the budget, like the tourism
and
bureau,
you have to show our game shows and our wrestling and because it's so prominent compared yeah. to what the plot of the movie should have been.
And the movie, which was never going gangbusters, just comes to a screeching halt while they
yes.
do
yeah.
all that for 40 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah, at least when you're with Tony Curtis and the kids, so you have the moment where he sees them on TV. They can't raise enough funds to get to Japan, but they're supposed to be able to face this team. So he calls them all into this.
Are they supposed to face this team, or do they want to face this team?
Well, I think from Tom saying in the second movie that we didn't watch, I think they earned a shot at the Japanese team.
I see. Okay.
So I infer that they're supposed to. Clearly they want to either way, and they are trying to raise funds. They go on a TV show, which rest in peace. Regis, I didn't think this would be our dedication to Regis Philbin.
Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, when Regis, I
heard the voice.
Away.
You couldn't see him because it's such a small TV, yeah. but you heard
but he
the
does
voice.
Have a very, you know, that's a voice that people our yeah. age, I think everybody remembers.
It's
his
the
voice
70s, and so he's much younger, but as soon as you hear that voice, you're like, that's
yeah.
Regis.
Regis Philbin.
Yeah,
in this movie.
So rest in peace, Regis, who died this past week. But they go on TV and they're trying to get to Japan. And so Tony Curtis, being this agent who is, he has a gambling problem. He's betting on horses. He hasn't paid the bookies. He's into all this trouble and he's always trying to come up with the next scheme. He's like the Bialystock. He's like, you know, he's like Max Bialystock of this movie. So he invites them all to this lunch at this totally dated 70s LA restaurant. Like everything's pink, you know,
yes,
embroidered,
it's a very
whatever.
70s.
It's yeah. It's horrible yeah. to look at. You're just like cringing at the decor.
I do love where the kids walk in. This is the scene where they talk about the drink. Like yeah. Kelly's not there, but yeah. they start ordering like prime rib.
Yeah. Right.
My point is, to your point, I'm trying to say that at least when Tony Curtis and the kids are together, there's
yes.
something to enjoy, right? It
yeah.
may not be the best script, but you enjoy it. You're like, okay, this is what I came for. You've got the coach who he's the surrogate for
Walter Matthau
from the first one. Clearly, they're always trying to fill that surrogate role with these sequels. And so you've got that. You've got the kids who are tumultuous. They've got this, you know, they're fighting him on everything. They're trying to negotiate things. And he says, get lunch. And they all want the filet mignon. And there are funny moments in this movie, at least when they're together. And then when you get to Japan, after they finally agree, and is it Ogilvy or is it a new character? Who is the character that negotiates? I think it's
Ogilvy, who's just kind of like, we want 5%.
Or is it supposed to be an Ogilvy surrogate? I can't
remember. Ogilvy is not back for this. I think it might be Rudy.
Oh, so maybe it's just, yeah.
I think it might be Rudy Stein.
Okay, so he's negotiating, and Tony Curtis wants to give him 2.5%. They want 5%, and they negotiate to 4%. So they get over to Japan, and then they, instead of going to the Hilton, Stein has booked them at this traditional Japanese, like, I don't know.
Hotel, I guess.
Well, but it looks like a dojo or something. You know what I mean? It's right. Like this cultural center where you've got the women dressed up like geishas or, you know, whatnot, and you've got the take your shoes off at the door, and it's this very, you know, beautiful, elegant place. And so they're, and, you know, and when they get in there, he's hitting his head on the ceilings because he's taller than the average people. You know, there's
Isn't it funny that, like, we gave that exact sequence like guff in Oh God You Devil, where he keeps bonking his head on things, and this one I was just like, I don't know, like it's slapsticky enough that it doesn't,
because you're looking for anything entertaining. Yeah. And that's,
I guess that's like, probably
also
true.
Like in Oh God You Devil, it wasn't the hitting his head, he kept slipping down the stairs, and we were like,
oh, you're right.
And our questioning
drunk the whole time.
Our questioning was like, why is he slipping down the stairs? Where right. And this one we understand, like, you know, and this he's taller than the average Japanese right. person, and so it's built for shorter people. So
right, sure, and that's sure. not that even. And it's not like it's offensive. It's just a fact that on average, Americans are taller, so they build things differently. But you get that. You get him hitting his head. You get the kids that are all yelling, and he's trying to do business deals. And he's like, I need 3 phones. I've only got 1 phone here. And so he gets another phone, and then Stein's on a phone, and he's on there. And he's like, give me this. You take this call. There are things that are enjoyable, but we're talking about a total of like 10 minutes in the movie that these characters are all together. But those things...
some reason I really couldn't figure out, they took the character of Feldman, and he's a born-again Christian now, and...
I think they wanted to diversify as much
as... It's just so weird, because like, I mean, with a name like Feldman, that's typically a Jewish name, and that kid is Jewish. I mean, because his last name is Marx, he's actually Gummo Marx's grandson. So, like, he looks like Harpo Marx, right? And in the second one, when he comes up to bat, someone even says, like, this kid looks like one of the Marx brothers, because Harpo would be his uncle, right?
Yeah,
or his
that's
great uncle or grand uncle. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that works.
Great uncle, yeah.
Yeah, but so I'm like, so clearly he's Jewish or from a Jewish heritage, and so they make him a born again Christian. Honestly, he had the funniest line in the film where.
Which one was that?
When they get moved to the new hotel and they're going off to hang out with the Japanese team, and Tony Curtis is like, what? You're going to go hang out with the competition? And he says, the Lord works in mysterious ways, and he's led us to a wholesome friendship.
That was pretty funny when all the kids start leaving and saying, yeah. But, also, we didn't talk about starting out how this movie, I think maybe one of the more offensive things is, it shows you the American, I don't know what you want to call it, but like still this ferociousness about like they're watching war movies about World War II against the Japanese. And so they're basically comparing, flipping back and forth between the war movie and the Japanese baseball team. Like they're the enemy and they want to go beat the enemy. I'm like, ooh, that's kind of.
Well, I mean, they use a racial slur when Engelberg's on TV.
They censor it, right?
He says MFers, and then he uses like the Asian N-word.
Oh, they censor the MFer.
And they bleep the MFers, but they don't bleep the other one.
So I thought that was like, oh, they're treating the Japanese as the enemy. Like in World War II, they're killing
When we get that in the first 5 minutes of the movie, I thought like, oh, geez, this is what we're in for.
And that's why I'm like, this is right on track.
It doesn't, and then it completely shifts and doesn't do that at all.
They become friends.
I think Ahmed drops an N-bomb when he's when he sees that Tony Curtis is only in this thing for the money.
And I do like that scene in that he, I mean, especially given the era that this movie is made, which is the late 70s, like that's a fairly cogent point to be making, that like, you took my little brother and turned him into a mascot. Like, he's not a person to you. He's a cute little stuffed animal that you trot out, because it was something you were seeing a lot in TV and movies at the time, where it's like, oh, here's a cute black kid, and so like, we've embraced this cute black kid, so we must be open-minded. And it's like, are you? Because as soon as he turns 15, you're not going to feel that way about him.
Right. Yeah, you're gonna push him off to the side.
Yeah,
and about him.
And or be scared of him, right? And so and so, so like that scene. I said there was one scene in this movie I liked. I take it back. There are two. And this scene with Ahmed, where he's basically calling him on that. Especially for a franchise that does have problematic moments with the way characters behave. Like, I just thought, like, I'm like, this is a pretty like forward thinking moment for a movie from 1978. You know,
I just thought it was an interesting, like, that character changes. Like, he becomes. I don't know. Like, there's a lovable nature to him in the first one,
right?
Right. Like, you know, he runs up in a tree because he's embarrassed, and he's, you know, there's a wonderful moment between him and Walter Matthau, where Matthau tells him a completely bull story about Hank Aaron striking out. What, you know, the
42 errors in Little League.
Well, it's because the kid's growing up and he's seeing the world and how race relations. And
you know, totally here's the thing: he has taken this trajectory. I mean, maybe we're reading way too much into this movie because it's not that good. But maybe maybe even if it isn't on the page, it's something the actor brought to it, which is he's taken this journey from cute black kid that people embrace to, well, now you're a black young adult, and now I'm worried you're going to steal my purse or take my car or mug me or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, so he's seen this happen personally, that he went from being cute to threatening, and the only thing that changed about him was his age.
Yeah.
Right.
And to speak to the scene, like, that Joe brought up, like, yes, he uses the N-word, but to its credit, as opposed to the first movie, at least Ahmed's the one that's using the N-word.
Yes.
And also, Tony Curtis is like, don't talk to me like
that. Don't use that word.
It's not a white person saying it, and Tony Curtis is also not supporting it. And he's like, hey, no.
Yeah.
You don't speak to me like that. We're not doing that. Because he's only, like, is muddy as his intentions are, he still is taking care of them. And he's not, it's not malicious. Like, yes, he's selfish, but he's also not trying to hurt them or anything. You know, he is taking care of them.
He's trying to make a buck off of them, but he's not necessarily trying to do it at their expense.
Yes. He also got them to Japan, which they wanted to. So
he is
not a malicious person. And so I like that he's like, hey, whoa, hold up. You know?
Yeah.
So we
should probably just get to the game, because there's not a whole lot else to talk about. So, like, I guess the problem was they played this game earlier and the Bears really kind of crapped the bed. And
they were the Bad News Bears from the first movie.
Right. And which is also boring, because it's like they do this in the second one. I'm like, how many times do we have to see this team backslide? Like, they're either at some point they're either good or they're not. Like,
well, but to be fair though, this is the Japanese championship team. I do think it's a whole different level of baseball. And they may have even mentioned it
but it's not that team was better. They were making really basic fundamental errors. They couldn't catch a ground ball, and they could, you know what I mean? Like, that's running into each other. Different than just coming across a better team, you know?
Well, right. That's the problem, is how do you, when the movie's based on a team being bad and that's their thing, how do you have them overcome that and then be bad again?
Look at the Mighty Ducks. The Mighty Ducks is a great example.
Quack, quack,
Mr. Ducksworth. But they're terrible, and they get better throughout the movie, but they keep coming up against they're terrible in the first movie, and they get better in the spoilers, they win, right? But then they keep playing teams that are better.
They go to like the US Olympic team.
They're in like the Junior Olympics, mm-hmm. and
they move up the ranks, so they face better challengers, and that's
they're always bad.
Right.
right? Like they only get better because they're playing harder teams.
That's what I think they're doing here, though, with the Japanese team. Is that's a different league, no pun intended. It's the way that they take baseball is. But you're right, though. But they're making basic errors.
They revert back to the Bad News Bears from the first movie.
We're not seeing them lose a close game because the other people are better. We're seeing them like just really behave as if they have never even encountered the game of baseball.
It's because this movie's a terrible movie.
Right. So anyway, so that's what, you know, so they lose that kind of TV deal and that's why they flounder for the next 50 minutes. And but then I don't even know how, but somehow they get them back that they're going to televise this game and it's going to be a big
deal. Tony Curtis basically, because the real quick, the martial arts match goes bad. The guy that was the star of that ends up trying to put his head through four bricks and he gets a concussion.
Knocks himself out.
And so Tony Curtis he's like, well, wait a minute. I've got a guy that can compete in the wrestling match. And so he goes and tries to get some rando guy that's this old overweight guy. And that falls through. And so he ends up having to put on the costume himself and go wrestle him. But he basically, I think, makes the deal that if I can get you this guy, then you will get us the coverage for the baseball game again. And so that's how he gets it back.
Gotcha. And then they go to a game show for 25 minutes.
Oh, my God. It's so bad. But he's like, he convinces the Japanese coach. He's like, hey, you can get some money for new equipment for the guys. I can pay off the guys that want to break my kneecaps. Hey, we all win.
Yeah.
We all win, except for us watching this movie, because we are constantly losing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Japanese baseball team ends up winning. It's like a talent competition, and they sing, and they end up winning. So that's something. And then they get to the baseball game, which this is the second. I fell asleep during the game show, and I fell asleep during the baseball match. I asked Tom, like, do I really need to go back and watch? So you'll have to explain.
You know it's bad when you finally get to the baseball, and you're still bored.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and so basically, the game is going on, and then there's a dust up on the field, and then everybody walks off the field, and they just walk away.
I woke up, and they were in a parking lot playing baseball.
Yeah, right. Like everybody, so they get in a fight over something, and it's like,
somebody's throwing at somebody again. Weird.
They bring in
They bring in three ringers.
They bring in three ringers to play for the Bears. And,
that's right.
And then they take they took the game way too seriously, and then it started
breaking down.
It started a fight, and then
and
then both teams just kind of quit and walked off the field with a tied 3-3.
So the Japanese coach is disgraced, and they think he's gonna that is a kind of a funny scene where Tony Curtis and the Japanese coach are eating dinner or whatever, and the Japanese guy picks up like a knife and starts cleaning it off.
Oh my
god! Tony
Curtis
is like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! Like, it's okay.
Don't commit harikari.
Don't." And the coach is like, "What? What are you?" I enjoyed that. We're just like, he's completely clueless.
Yeah.
And then they look out the window, and the kids are just playing ball on their own.
They're playing a pickup game and a lot.
Which is the way it should be, and, right? Like, just having fun playing the game.
And then they go downstairs, and then the TV producer, played by an actor who was one of the other team's coaches in the first movie, but he's like, let's go get the cameras. Let's get this back on TV. And they're just like, nope. No. We're not going to do that. And
he's like, you owe us for this and blah, blah, blah. And yeah. He's like, well, cool.
And this is the other scene I like. I like the fact that it basically ends with the kids playing a pickup game because they want to. Like, they want to see who wins. And it kind of takes it back to its origins, like the sport itself of like for kids, which is like, we're going to go play in a field somewhere and we'll know who won. They're not going to tell anybody else. And I also think it's interesting that, like, the first movie they lose, the second movie they win, and then the third movie they don't tell you. Like,
it's a draw.
They're just like, the kids are playing to have fun, and we're not going to tell you who wins the game. And, my guess is that was also a way to not upset the Japanese audience. That way their people didn't have to lose.
That's a good point, right? Neutral.
Yeah, but I do like the way that they, you know, and speaking of another misbegotten sequel, it's kind of Rocky V, right? Like it is
kind of,
that's the best part of that movie. I mean, it's definitely grading on a curve.
Rocky V.
But we're going to take it out of the ring, and it's going to be on the street, and it's going to be because we want to know who the winner is, not because of TV deals or anything like that. It's just going to be, we're going to do this because we want to.
Is that Tommy Gunn?
Yeah,
Tommy Gunn. Yeah. Touch me and I'll sue.
Yeah.
That's a great scene. That last scene, bad scenes, bad great scenes and bad movies.
Yeah, that
was a great scene.
That last fight in Rocky V where they're in the street is
it's good. It's wonderful.
That's a good scene, but you have to sit through a lot of bad movie to get to it.
I feel like at the end of this movie that maybe the legal department cut them off or something, but in this movie, one of the kids is wearing a Casablanca t-shirt with Humphrey Bogart's face on it, and then at the end, the way he walks away with the Japanese coach, I swear he's going to turn to him and say, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Like cut it off.
The camera's the exact same way. He puts his hand over his shoulder, just like the end of Casablanca, but he doesn't say that, and I'm like, that's too weird of a coincidence. There's a Casablanca shirt in it and it ends like that. Like,
well, Bogart did have quite the resurgence in the 70s. Like, we talked about this during the Blackbird. But you know, so he definitely kind of caught on with the younger crowd in the 70s. So it's not crazy that somebody, but I agree, that last shot seems to be trying to set up some sort of homage to the final scene in Casablanca.
Yeah.
And they're clearly you know, as they're fading out and out telling you which kids won, you know, they're clearly setting up another one because Tony Curtis is talking about, let's go to Cuba.
Going to Cuba. And, let's get Castro to throw out the first pitch. I was like, well, that doesn't age well, but all right.
So, so Carl Reiner was approached about making a fourth Bad News Bears movie.
Oh,
and
that could have been
That could have worked.
Oh, my God. I would have loved to have seen what he would have done. But so
Jackie Earl Haley is going to be 23 in that one.
Yeah, totally. So Paramount, get a load of this. Paramount had arranged for Fidel Castro to co-star
in the
Bad News Bears Go to Cuba. And so don't forget, Castro is a huge baseball fan. He almost went pro in the major leagues. It was going to feature him playing catch with the little leaguers and giving a pep talk and throwing out the first ball of the world championship game against the U.S. And then kind of similar to this one in the script, the game ends with a tie of 0-0. And then the two teams share the trophy 6 months at a time. So
was it the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I know. Right. So it's but, you know, that's the problem when you start doing this international stuff. Like, obviously, Cuba's not going to let you in if you're going to make them lose the game. But I also don't know how they would have done that because there was the trade embargo. I don't know how they would have got there to actually film that movie.
Maybe they don't fill it in.
Oh. Hold up. We're leaving California and we're going to the Colorado Springs Gazette January 7th, 1978. Okay, so they're talking about the producer, Michael Ritchie.
He directed Fletch as well. He's directed a lot of movies.
So they're talking about Michael Ritchie. And in this next paragraph, they go, he might also become executive producer because he produced this one for the Bad News Bears Go to Cuba. And he gets a gleam in his eye when dreaming of future bad news trips to the Moscow Olympics. Right. I mentioned that.
Right.
And even outer space.
What?
And well, if Jason Voorhees can do it.
In the vein of the old Abbott and Costello comedies where even the sky wasn't the limit for extending the winning idea. So not only were we talking about Cuba, summer camp, and the Moscow Olympics, he wanted to bring the Bad News Bears to space.
Oh, I mean, if you're going to go, if you're going to do it,
oh,
you know, like just own it.
Yeah. But Michael Ritchie, like he made some other sports movies. He had a touch for it. He directed Wildcats, the football movie with Goldie Hawn, and what a young Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson.
Uh-huh.
He directed Digstown, the boxing movie that I sung the praises of during Sting 2.
That was a good movie. I watched it.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you agree. I'm glad I pointed you in the right direction.
I enjoy that.
And then he also directed the Albert Brooks, Brendan Fraser movie, The Scout.
I love that movie.
Okay,
and that's a fun movie.
And probably his biggest sports movie next to Bad News Bears, he directed Cool Runnings. So,
that's got a lot of fans.
Yeah, and he also directed. Then, as we also mentioned, he directed Fletch, the sequel Fletch Lives, and he also directed Eddie Murphy's The Golden Child.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
so
what do you think of John Hamm as Fletch?
I think it could work because they're going to follow the books, not the movie. So you got to kind of get the movie out of your head. And if you think about it from a book, I've read all the books. I think if they're gonna be more about the books than trying to recreate the film,
sure.
I think that could totally work, and I think that's a smart way to go to, because Chevy Chase's performance is so memorable. I just think
that's the problem when you compare him to Chevy Chase. It doesn't seem like it will work, but hopefully because they're going off the book, it will work better.
Yeah,
I've got one more thing here to go out. I think this is a very interesting way to go out, and I'm getting more respect for Michael Ritchie as we go on here. So it continues in the Colorado Springs Gazette article. Oddly, the Bad News Bears Go to Japan has been shot by director John Barry in two versions, including a Japanese edition where the Bears lose the climactic game. So they had a version for
Japan
where they lose. And this is a quote from Ritchie. "It's the shameless pursuit of the big buck," says Ritchie with a self-mocking smile. "I don't even consider the Bears movies to be movies for kids, although the studio sells them that way." And he settles back to muse on such madness, making one wonder whether he might someday turn his cameras on the craziest life movie business itself. So he even could admit that these movies, they're just trying to churn them out and make a quick buck. And I mean, I think having just produced the Japan movie and how there was nothing in it for kids, there was no fun stuff with the kids, he's like, yeah, I don't even consider these kids movies.
Yeah, and because they star kids, you gotta churn them out. Like, if you want to bring the cast back,
right,
like you gotta do it quick. Like, you can't come back in 5 years and make another Bad News Bears movie. You gotta get to it. So and even if you bring in new kids, like if you want to have some connective tissue from film to film, you almost have to put out one a year, or at the most one every 2 years. So
sure,
you know, and
that, I guess I feel like that's kind of the missed opportunity, is your Bad News Bears could almost be like James Bond.
Sure.
Yeah, you could. It could be like Menudo.
New team
like
every year.
You keep like one or two players from the first one, and then
right. And that's what Menudo did. That was the genius of Menudo. Like, I mean, they would bring in new people, but they would never bring in all new people.
Right. It's
right?
Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, like you would.
Yeah, exactly.
You would keep people, and then as they'd age out, you'd bring in some new people, and so you'd always have connective tissue to get you from place to place. And I mean, it was brilliant, honestly. So
yeah, well, but this movie wasn't.
This was awful.
Yeah, this movie was
the highlight
bad.
For me was Antonio Inoki.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, that's
so
fun.
Here are the top 10 grossing movies of 1978.
Let's see how many remakes we've got.
Just to give you an idea of where you're at in the pop culture zeitgeist. So coming in at number 10, The Deer Hunter, remake free. And then Revenge of the Pink Panther at number 9. So
that gets a remake.
Yeah, that does. Number 8, Up in Smoke. I did not realize how popular those Cheech and Chong movies were.
Oh, man, those first two for sure.
I knew that they were popular. I didn't realize it was like, you know, top 10 highest grossing movies of the year popular.
Hmm.
Coming in at number 7, a sequel, Jaws 2.
No remake. That doesn't count.
But they made sequels like crazy.
Okay, we'll give you sequels. Yeah, okay.
And
how long until they remake Jaws?
I swear to Christ.
People go back to shark movies over and over again. So you never
Orca.
You didn't really get shark movies. Well, even recently we've had a couple, like, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
so I mean, you didn't really get shark movies prior to Jaws. So
yeah. Like the Meters Down movies and all that.
Yeah. Number 6, Hooper, the Burt Reynolds classic.
Hoopa.
Number 5, Heaven Can Wait. Which was a
remake.
Which was a remake, and got a remake with Chris Rock.
Uh-huh.
Number 4, Every Which Way But Loose. Number 3, Animal House. Number 2, Grease. And then number 1, Joe?
Superman the movie.
There you go.
Yeah. So 4.
Eked out a win. Beat Grease by just $2 million. So
that's
just barely.
Damn right, Man of Steel.
Barely,
well, not Man of Steel, but Superman.
Though. Yeah.
Just Man of Steel. Don't talk about
that. Oh, it depends.
Barely
on.
Pull it out.
Depends on when you say that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is the Bad News Bears Go to Japan. I guess let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. wherever you're getting your podcast from. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers. So next week, I guess, more Misbegotten sequels. Here's what I think we should do, since we did a fun one. I think we should do one that we should do one for the that's more for the ladies.
Mm. Oh, all the 50 Shades movies?
All the 50 Shades. No. I thought it has to be good to start. I say we tackle The Blue Lagoon and Return to the Blue Lagoon.
Mm.
That first Blue...
Brooke Shields?
Yeah.
Brooke Shields?
Yeah, that first movie. That
Mila,
was a massive
Mila
hit.
Jovovich.
Yeah.
Mila Jovovich?
The first one was witnesses. A massive hit, and I've never seen either one.
Is she... She's on the sequel, is she?
Mila...
She
Mila
is?
Jovovich is the girl in the sequel.
In the sequel,
I thought that was one of the Hemingways.
No.
Okay.
So anyway, that's what
you
people
are clearly
have.
Not a Jovovich witness, as we spoke about last
time. I am not. That is
so
correct.
There's homework for those playing along at home that want to keep up with us. We will tackle the Blue Lagoon movies. So I've never seen one. So
me either.
It'll be a fresh take for all of us to figure out what made this so popular in the first place.
So I've interviewed the guy that takes over the main role in the second movie. He was in the show Charmed.
Okay.
Brian Krause is the guy. Wouldn't that be interesting? I wonder if he thinks fondly enough. It was his first big acting role, so it's the thing that's where he got his big break. So, you know, I don't know how he looks back on it, but wouldn't that be interesting to get his opinion, even if for a small clip, if I were able to get his thoughts
on
totally.
It.
Back on.
Yeah,
do it.
Give it a shot. Yeah. So anyway, that's what you have to look forward to. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Eddie Burke brings in some ringers.
When America introduced them to baseball, the Japanese adopted it as a way of life. But that was before the Bad News Bears go to Japan. Now, the most successful kids in movie history leave America and set out to conquer the world.
It's all right, guys. Take off your shirt.
Can we take them to our room?
Now, how do I know? Do I look Japanese?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.